Welcome everyone to Rock Talk Podcast, the start of season two, and today to help bring us into the next season of the podcast is my friend Craig Nielsen. He is a drummer from many great bands, including Flotsam and Jetsam, Children of the Corn, Smashing Alice, BYOB, and October Rust. Craig, how are you doing, my dude?
Pretty good, man. Smashing just played last night, so I'm a little discombobulated, still very late night.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I know I've seen you with both October Rust and Children of the Corn in one concert. It was in you guys played over at Counts Vamped. Mm-hmm. It was, for anyone who doesn't know, October Rust is a Typo Negative cover band, and Children of the Corn is a Corn cover band. And right. This man, he kills it on the drums for both. The bands are very, very good cover bands. Like, I gotta say, like, those, like, all your cover bands, y'all sound very, very close to the original source material. Very nice to hear that.
You know, we don't look, I mean, you know, Children of the Corn, obviously Joel looks quite a bit like Jonathan, but, you know, we're not really a tribute band that looks like the people so much.
Yeah.
And Brendan doesn't look anything like Peter Steele.
Yeah. So, well, how long were you with Flotsam and Jetsam? Because I know you're with them, how many albums did you guys do together?
So I was with them for 15 years. I did four studio records, which was the first one was Unnatural Selection, then My God, then Dreams of Death, and then The Cold. And then we have three live DVDs that I'm on. One's from Poland called Once in a Death Time, and then another one from Tokyo and another one from Phoenix.
Nice.
And then we did a Metallica, an actually really well done Metallica tribute CD. We did Damage Inc. and Motorhead starts the record off, and everything. It's like a bunch of really great bands and players that was done by Bob Kulick. So that was significant for me to do that one also.
Nice, very cool. Now I know that you've been to Europe. What's the highlight of touring in Europe? Like, what's that like?
Well, I mean, you know, I've actually visited Europe 11 times now. So, I mean, after a while, it's less thrilling. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, there's the buses aren't as cool as American buses. I mean, but they have better views because they're double decker. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of a highlight because you have those European style buses where you actually have a better view in the perch on top of the bus than even the driver has. It's like you have the driver's view, but even better because you're over the driver. So the buses are cool in that way, but they're not as comfortable and the climate's not great. And, you know, Europe's really, really cool. I mean, I suppose specifically my best memories of European shows, specifically, I don't know why Greece, playing in Greece is a real trip. Those people go crazy. You know, damn. It's like everyone thinks Germany, which is obviously true. But in Greece, they really go over the top crazy for the bands. Do you know where else they do is Mexico City. Huh. I think if you had to ask me where the best, like craziest crowd I've ever played, and I've been in like, I don't know, 15 countries. The craziest crowd I think I've ever played for was Mexico City. So Europe's beautiful, and you know, obviously it's very, very beautiful, but not everyone speaks English like people think. So, you know, a lot of people think everybody speaks English. It's not true. So there's a lot about it that's still challenging, you know what I mean? But the straight up beauty of it all, and the metal fans obviously are metal fans, so they're very appreciative fans, you know, so that's great. But the accommodations and the traveling is, you know, like the clubs have these kind of nasty showers and kind of nasty food and that kind of thing. So, like, if you were to offer me a tour to go through Europe tomorrow or the States, I would take the States every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, man.
That is funny. What would you say is was the best part of being in Flotsam and Jetsam?
Well, the integrity of the players. I mean, I've always found Eric Ak to be on the same level as Dio as far as like his raw talent, and like I would put him up there with the three best metal singers that ever lived. So playing with Eric Ak in and of itself is a trip. The players were just, everyone was a total pro. I mean, I kind of was lucky. I got in when it was already very well established, and so they had already figured out how to play live and the pitfalls and the challenges and all that. So I got an accelerated learning about the pro level music business. We played a lot of, I played with Slayer and every band you could think of. We did festivals, with every single band you could possibly name. So I got to see what it was like in real life, in real time, hanging out in that environment. So that was very interesting. Plus, personally, as a performer and a player, it brought my game way up because, I had to perform on, the same night as like Dave Lombardo or
Yeah.
all these great, so you learn really, really quick how the pro game is so much different than the local club game. You know what I mean? And
Yeah.
it's, yeah, so it, it, you know, it separates, if you're really cut out for that thing or not. So I found out that I was, and so that was probably the professionalism of the players and the fans. I mean, like we had people that would fly literally, like we would be, let's say, in Austria, and there people would come up that just flew in from Ireland to see us. And
Damn.
so when you have that kind of love, we would get emails from soldiers in the field that are, allowed to use headphones and whatever, literally in their helmets in some situations. We would get emails from soldiers saying, if it weren't for Flotsam, I don't even know how I'd make it out here. When
Damn.
you get that kind of love and you realize the impact that you've really made on some, like we played in Japan, and it was the first time the band ever went to Japan, and people were lining up for autographs for things that even Eric, the singer, hadn't seen ever, like the memorabilia that the Japanese had, so there's, you just find out, that like Flotsam, for instance, it's bigger than the players involved. It really means something to the fans. And when you're in that situation where, like, it's not just you wrote this record and you kind of think it's cool, these people out there, love it. And they really, really love it. And you see it and you see the response. And so, I mean, there wasn't anything I didn't like about being in Flotsam. It was a great band to be in. They didn't take themselves very seriously. We weren't the band in the back that were punching each other, getting all fired up. And that we found that very goofy. And we did see that a lot out there on tour, the serious metal band thing. We didn't like that too much. So it was nothing but fun, really. A great brotherhood for 15 years.
Well, that's awesome, man. It's really good. And also, it's hilarious. You kind of already led into a question that I was gonna ask you is out of all the venues, out of all the people to play with, what would be the dream just for you? It's like what venue, who would you like to be playing with for a show?
You mean if I were in Flotsam still, like who would I want to perform with, or who would I
I mean,
want to play now?
just in general, just here's your dream. Just this, like me, whatever band I have been in or will be in, and who you would want to be on your lineup with you. It's like who's like the dream. Just like I want them on the playbill with my name on the playbill as well.
I was lucky enough to play with, on shows with most of my idols. I guess it would have to, if I could be in a band that played with Gojira. I'm a huge Gojira fan, and like we've never played, or Meshuggah. I've never played with Meshuggah or Gojira. Like if I could be on a show that included one of those bands, that would be pretty fantastic. I'd use those two.
Fuck yeah. And also, other than Mexico City, where would you say is your favorite place to be to play? Where's your favorite place to go to play shows at?
I mean, I said Greece. You know, Greece, there's just something different about Greece than the rest of Europe to me. You know, the places, I mean, I didn't love playing probably would have been Belgium, France. I mean, there were good people, but I didn't get like the same feeling inside from, you know, the Mediterranean countries are the more spirited countries, you know, Italy, Spain. You know, Spain was awesome, but you can't, you know, you're not supposed to call like Barcelona Spain, but you know, I guess they take great offense if you're actually from Barcelona to call it Spain. You're supposed to call it something else, Catalonia. Those are great, great audiences. You know, Madrid, Italy. I was expecting a little bit more from Italian audiences. It was okay. Germany is, you know, the gold standard of the best audiences. More people show up. You know, it's not uncommon for them to have 150,000 people out there at a festival. They're the most diehard true metal fans on the planet. And that day, you know, they still have old leather jackets with patches from their favorite bands from back in the day. And they've had that jacket now for 30 years. They keep adding patches. They're really, really diehard metal fans. And they're quite honest. If they don't like a record you just did or whatever, they have no problem telling you. You know, Germany is, you know, I've been to Germany quite frequently, and I think I've seen pretty much every city in Germany. And, you know, I was never disappointed in the German crowd ever. Austrian crowds are pretty cool. Austria is beautiful. Austria is particularly beautiful. Switzerland, not the craziest crowd ever, but Switzerland is unbelievably beautiful. You know, but straight up from a crowd perspective in the whole continent of Europe, in my opinion, Spain, Greece, and Germany would be the best places to play.
Fuck yeah. Cool. Now, a big difference that you have above all my other guests that I have is you have been in a very well-known and established band. And I wanted to ask you what it's like in studio with an established band versus what it's like with a beginning starting up band
in the studio.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a lot to be said for producers. You know, a lot of, you know, they kind of get like, you know, a lot of, obviously the best producers are very well known to create great records. But, you know, on a level of like a Flotsam and Jetsam where we can't afford and all, you know, like the best producer in the world, still just having a producer that's extremely skilled with the technology so that like a producer that's also an engineer. When you're in a real band, you know, you have an engineer and a producer that also knows how to engineer. So like if you're in a beginning band, you know, you may find some guy who knows how to run his Pro Tools or whatever and get some decent tones. But mastering, you have to know where to send your product for mastering because they can really screw up your perfect mix with a shitty mastering. Mm-hmm. Mastering is very, very important part of the process. And like, you know, pro bands seem to know where to send their products to be mastered. You know, you can, okay, another advantage is if you're in a real band with a budget, you can record in the best recording room. But the best recording rooms aren't necessarily the best mixing rooms. So if you have a real budget, you can mix somewhere else that's better for mixing. You can record, you know, the drums in that perfect drum room. You can record whatever in the perfect rooms for the instrument. And then you can take it over here and get mixed. And then you send it over there to get mastered. And it's just, you just have a better chance. There's a lot of people great at Pro Tools and editing. But Pro Tools and editing can't turn a subpar song into a better song, but a producer can. And I've seen examples over and over and over again. You know, we've worked with some good ones, like On the Cold. We work with, his name was Rob Patlin, and he had just remastered all the Megadeth entire catalog. So nice. He was, you know, yeah. And, you know, I work with Bill Metoyer, who is world famous, you know, for me. He's like the one of the preeminent heavy metal engineer producers that ever lived. And so they can take apart and they can they really do create magic on some, like, you know, whenever you hear like vocals that all of a sudden have this killer like delay or whatever. I mean, that's not necessarily the singer that thought of that.
Yeah. Those are the
spots where they can, you know, hard breaks or how, you know, the arrangement or whatever. Like, a lot of bands come in with great ideas and producers make them even better ideas. So if you're a real band, you know, with real band, I mean like a signed band, and you have access to a budget, then it can't be said enough about how much a producer can add to the process, not just some guy who's really good on his gear with Pro Tools. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks. That's a great new perspective on it. Yes, a good majority of everyone I have had on is self-produced or just record it onto a laptop and mix it up in Audacity type stuff.
I mean, and I understand it. I mean, thank God, you know, when I was growing up, there was 2-inch tape and that's all there was.
Yeah.
It costs like hundreds of thousands or 100,000, like Flotsam spent on the records I wasn't on when they were on MCA, like Drift, for instance. I mean, I think they spent over like $150,000 because there was wasn't all digital. You had to record on tape and it was expensive. So now you have the potential for greatness, you know, without having to worry about the expense of it with all the methods that you just mentioned. So if you're a real, real talent songwriter and you can really bring it, then you have the ability to do it with these cheap digital formats. And so I'm all for it.
Yeah, it really is cool how much professional equipment has become available to just the everyday consumer. This is where on my phone, I can get the same type of editing software that someone in Hollywood would be using. It's really good to see stuff like that happening, to where it's just like all the same tools. It's an even playing field for everyone to be on. And it really just is a matter of, do you have the talent to utilize this to make it? Which is really cool to see happening. So with cover bands, I know you've been all around in Vegas with the cover bands. Have there been any tours with the other cover bands? Because I know Children of the Corn have been on tour. You know, you guys came over to SoCal a couple years ago. Has BYOB or Smashing Alice been out on tour?
BYOB went out with Children of the Corn. I've been doing that double duty stuff forever. I mean, I've done 3 shows before in a row. I'm also in a Rage Against the Machine cover band called Fistful of Steel. So BYOB went out to those Southern California shows in Bakersfield with Children of the Corn in San Diego. But it's just, you know, it's not worth it almost, because it's just like, you know, you end up paying to go. Because, you know, the gas in California is super expensive. The hotels, I mean, nobody wants to drive home in the middle of the night. Now you need 5 hotel rooms. And it's just like, you didn't, so what's it all for? You're going out there and you're breaking even or losing money to go. And then the rooms are packed. And you know the promoter's making money and they're lying, saying that they haven't somehow. And, you know, I'm not singling anybody out. It's a well-known fact. You know what I mean? It's just like you see packed rooms and they'll still sit there and tell you that they haven't broke even and therefore you can't make the bonus that you. I mean, it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. And I won't, you know, I've already kind of lived that dream. I don't need to live that dream to that point where I'm going to pay for it.
Yeah. Cool. All right. And in Vegas, something that I've asked all my local Vegas musicians who's played around. What's your favorite venue out there in Vegas?
Well, I mean, it's without question, it's Vamp. It's just Vamp. I mean, I played in all states in Europe, and Vamp has one of the best stage sounds in the world that I've ever played on for a club, meaning their monitors and just the stage itself, as me, from a drummer's perspective, because I don't use in-ears or anything like that. So I trust my monitor and I trust the stage sound, and It's, you know, very dodgy when you're out there on the road, what kind of stage sound you're going to have. And Vamped is, I'd rate it up there in the top 10 percentile of any club. So to me, what drives my performance is how I'm hearing it from my point of view on the stage. If I'm hearing it really bitching and the bass drum sound killer and I hear the guitars and the and everything's just right, it's, you know, I could just go by in-ears, but I don't want them for whatever reason. So Vamp over all the clubs to me is very, very easy to get a good performance playing there, because the sound that I'm hearing is making me feel like I'm, you know, in the pocket, and every, so it's making me confident and I can hear everything. And so I love Vamp. The crowds are one thing, and the crowds are great there. Crowds are great in a lot of places, but the vibe at Vamped, I would, you know, if I were offer shows tomorrow at all the Vegas venues, including the Joint and House of Blues and wherever, I would take Vamped every time.
Yeah, I would say that, because I've heard that from Joel said that as well, and a couple of other guys has said that, and I agree. Counts Vamped is it's a great experience being there.
It is.
The stage really is good.
They're so pro, and you know, so they have House DW, which is like the, you know, among the better drum sets out there. They have a really high quality DW house drum set, which is, you know, where do you find that? So I don't have to schlep any gear there. And they use the best mics, and they have a great sound guy. And it's just, yeah, I love playing Vamp.
Yeah, the quality is always great there. So what's hilarious is you definitely perpetrate the stereotype of the drummer who has his hand in every pocket of different projects. What's it like having all of these different bands that you're just juggling this in to go, hey, with?
You know, I don't know how, because I just seem to be able to remember massive amounts of music. And so for me, you know, I don't even own a drum set, right? So Flotsam owned all my drum sets because they were like, you know, I was endorsed and whatever, and Flotsam paid for them. So when I came out to Vegas, which was almost 15 years ago, I left those drums in Phoenix, and I never bought a drum set out here. So I'm kind of at a point where all I really have to do to juggle all these bands. I saw what was missing, in my opinion, in Vegas in the club scene. That, you know, I saw what Smashing Alice was doing, which was setting that band apart from the other cover bands, which was we were the heavier cover band. And yeah. And so coming from a heavier background, I always saw the impact it makes on crowds. So I saw it, you know, I was in Smashing Alice now for years. So, you know, I just saw this hole where there was this tribute band thing coming around, and it wasn't dying, and everybody was writing off the tribute band saying it was just trend, and, you know, it was gonna die, but it never did. And so I, you know, was talking to Joel, is really responsible for it, because he's the one at a party where said, hey, what do you think about, you know, doing like a Korn tribute band? And I was like, yeah. So we did that, and then that kicked ass, and those shows were packed, and we were headlining House of Blues. We brought like 1,000 people to House of Blues, our first show there.
Yeah.
And so and then Dallas from Smashing Alice and Chris Iorio from Smashing Alice said, let's do a system tribute. And I'm like, yeah. And that kicked ass, and people were going to those shows, and then the Rage show. And then the way the October Rust came about was simply we had a show offering for Halloween at House of Blues, and the club wanted one more band, and they just weren't finding the right fit. So Brendan, myself, and Ryan from October Rust got together and said, let's offer for, it was just really going to be a one-off. We're going to put together our, because we love, you know, Typo Negative. And so we just, we're doing that for the House of Blues for one show. And then, And then, you know, so it went really well. So we played a couple more, but then COVID happened. But the point is for me is I don't really have to work, and I'm not being a dick, but I don't have to like work as hard as you might think to learn. I mean, I just basically put it all on a playlist, all the Korn, all the system, all the everything, smashing or whatever. And I just listen to it and I'm able to just learn that way. I learn by ear. 100%. I don't work out any parts on before I show up. Now we might rehearse a couple times before a show, but I already know the parts, so I learn the parts in my head just listening to them. And then we go to a rehearsal studio that has drums, and then we work it out. But it's not that hard for me to do for some reason. You know, I mean, I grew up in apartments, and I never. You know, if I wanted to learn how to play songs, I had to learn by ear and kind of like air drumming or tapping along or whatever. To me, if I can tap, that's to me playing the part, because the part is that the, you know, you're working out in your head what's going on. And once you understand it in your head, it for me, it's no problem to execute it as long as I know what's going on. And in rock and roll, you know, in heavy metal, a lot of it, unless you're getting like Meshuga, you know, that, you know, the math metal thing, like most metal is not in odd times. Most metal, and you know, like even the System of a Down, there's crazy changes constantly, but they don't do many odd times. And the odd times that they do are kind of easy to grab onto. So it's not a big mystery because everything's basically played in four mostly. And if it's played in four, then you just have to memorize what's going on, but you don't have to really figure it out. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, so totally.
Listen to the stuff and then go play it. So it's not that hard.
Yeah, I had a friend who played guitar who's by ear. I remember I played him Surfacing from Slipknot, and he's just like, oh, okay. And he just started playing it. And I'm just like, oh, you fucker. It's one of those things, you just sit there and it's like, it's just not fucking fair.
Well, listen, man, you don't know it by ear, and you don't know it if you're, I mean, then you don't know it. Because when you learn it by ear, you memorize it properly. Like if you're kind of person that goes and rewinds parts and learns parts after part after part, you may know all the parts, but you forgot how they're arranged. To me, it's like, it's the only way to learn is by ear.
Yeah. Another thing I was wondering about, if BYOB is, we, as everyone knows, because the hype about it was so big, there's two new System of a Down tracks, first two tracks in 13 years. Are you guys going to be adding that into your set list anytime soon, those two tracks?
No, we're not in love with those tracks. So, we love System of a Down. It's one of our all-time favorite bands of all time, but we thought they kind of maybe rushed those new tracks. I mean, they're not as inspired in our opinion as the ones that we can already play from the other. I mean, they've got such a catalog that it's no problem adding songs.
Yeah, that is true. Like they do have a big enough catalog where you can have a new set list every show and still be going through it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I had a question for you. Something I've been asking all of my guests is, the top five most influential albums of all time for you. What would you like that impacted you the most and shaped your taste in music and how you play?
I mean, you know, I'm over 50. So, I mean, you know, the bands, the music that got me most interested to be a drummer, you know, weren't necessarily metal. Metal kind of came along when I was already in like high school. You know what I mean? Yeah. I was a big Police fan. So, and, you know, I mean, I love Stuart Copeland's drumming. I still, even though he's not metal at all, I mean, I, you know, found him to be one of the most inspiring, you know, I saw the old Police shows. I mean, I was there and the Synchronicity tour and all that. And he really did something for me. So, I mean, I guess Ghost in the Machine would probably be big influential record for me. You know, I was a big fan of Jethro Tull, the drummer, for some reason. Like, even when I was like 10 years old, Barrymore Barlow. I mean, all that old Tull really inspired me because, you know, the grooves grabbed me. Obviously, Rush. You know, I saw the Permanent Waves tour. I saw Moving Pictures tour. You know, Moving Pictures was a huge, you know, I mean, I would sit there and air drum to it day and night for, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Moving Pictures, obviously.
That is a big bummer. I'm upset about it. I never went to go see Rush. And now I'm never going to. It's just...
Well, yeah, if you didn't see him back then, I mean, I've seen him back then and I've seen him in the last 5 years and whatever, 10 years, I mean, 10 years, whatever. But the Rush of the early 80s was, you know, you'll never get that experience again. I was also a huge Genesis, not the old weird Genesis, but even their poppy records like Abacab and whatnot. If you listen to the drumming on those records, it's like, you know, it's so well done. Like Phil Collins brought so much musicality to drums. So, you know, like Abacab was a very big record for me, you know, so basically all. And then, you know, when metal started happening, okay, you know, so for metal, I mean, clearly, obviously Master of Puppets, you know, I mean, who wouldn't say that? But, you know, I was a big Megadeth fan, too. And, you know, the reason I ever got known to the Flotsam to get an audition was from Nick Menza from Megadeth. Like, I was friends with him. And so he, you know, so obviously, you know, Rust in Peace, you know, was a major, major metal record for me.
Yeah.
And then I started getting a bit more into the math metal-y kind of thing when it was still not like everybody doing it. So like the earlier Meshuggah records, and then I think Gojira kind of went next level with it, to where they do a lot of the odd weird math stuff, but I think they don't do it for oddness sake, and they seem to have bridged straight ahead ferocity with technique probably better than a lot of bands do. So probably those would be some of my biggest. I think the drummer from I would say, oh, LD50, one of the most inspired drumming records ever, from Mudvayne. So LD50 was a huge record. I like the drummer from Mudvayne quite a bit, and you know, so those would be some.
Cool, nice. All right, man. Well, to wrap it up, I just want to point everyone in the direction of, if you're in Las Vegas, coming up Sunday, June 6th, BYOB, they're going to be playing a show there at the Tuscany. I definitely recommend, if you're into System of a Down, go check out that shit out. Check out all of the stuff Craig's in. Smashing Alice, October Rust, all of those bad boys. Go check them out. It's all of these bands that you are in. They're very talented bands. You're a talented individual, and you are banded together with a bunch of talented musicians. And I love everything you guys are doing.
Appreciate that, man.
Yeah. So definitely check that shit out, guys. Craig, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It was my pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, man. I appreciate it. Had a good time.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on. Take it easy. Stay safe.
Okay.